your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to Alchemy. Today I'm joined with James Kennedy, founder at Apothecana. We're going to talk all about cannabis and the beauty industry. James, it's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Jeff, and thanks to Phyla for putting these this series together.
Totally. So, James, I was really excited to chat with you today. Your background is pretty impressive. You know, you had quite a bit of experience in the beauty and cosmetics industry. You were at Aveda and Victoria's Secret and L Brands and J&J, and the list goes on. And you've really been in the cannabis market for quite some time. So I kind of look at you as really an early pioneer. And I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about your story and really what led you into the cannabis disruption space.
Yeah. And back then, though, I don't know if I was trying to be disruptive. It was like, maybe a escape pod. Before coming into the cannabis industry, which I entered into the industry back in 2009, I first out of college, I spent some time at Aveda, and I was industrial designer, was my education. I was really into sustainability, environmentally friendly design. The chief marketing officer at Aveda had come to my alma mater, where he also went, University of Cincinnati, and had given a speech. And I just walked up kind of at the end. I was like, man, that the place that you're talking about, that's where I want to be. That's the kind of stuff I want to be working on. And I got an internship on the spot, which was cool. And went up to New York and spent time working on environmentally friendly packaging and retail design, and got to work with tribes in South America, where we were doing fair trade agreements and doing royalty agreements. Actually, with we would translate the artwork they were using, you know, like in their face painting and ceremonies, and you know, and then we used the same berries they were using as the ink in our packaging. It was just all this really cool stuff. And it was a lot about trying to make sure, you know, I think that the practices that the business was, was more than just marketing. Like, it was really like, you know, doing things. We went from, the caps over the course of like 4 years, went from 0% post-consumer recycled content because nobody could do it in this type of cap, up to, you know, like 85 or 90%. So it was like, you know, they're really trying to do some things that mattered. And that definitely appealed to me. And then, you know, kind of, I was working at Aveda after they had sold to Estee Lauder. So I was actually working for Estee Lauder. But I had stayed close with some folks that were kind of previously at Aveda, and I ended up getting an opportunity to work for the founder of Aveda. It was on his next company after Aveda, called Intelligent Nutrients, and I went in and took a role as creative director at the brand, and was really into doing all that, you know, kind of packaging and retail stuff. But he brought me into the lab, and I started working with the actual ingredients, and it just like blew me away. The depth and the, just what you could do with these like really magical plant essences that, you know, I thought that formulation of products, you know, you needed a chemistry degree and you were dealing with these like heavy duty, you know, kind of chemical, like, kind of formulations. But, you know, we'd have these people walk in that have this, you know, this one guy, I remember, came in with his briefcase, and he opened up the briefcase, and he had, like 100 different samples of jasmine that was, you know, from different farms along the Nile in Egypt. And we sat there and smelled through each one of them, you know, and he kind of explained their benefits. And, you know, it was a really banner year for jasmine that year. And I remember, my old mentor and boss Horst, he was just like, I'll take it all. And he ended up buying like up all the jasmine because it was, you know, kind of like a really great wine crop year. But the stuff was just, you know, it was magical. And, you know, the plant essences that we were working with, you know, he spoke to the synergies and the harmonics where you would combine these, you know, like a few ingredients and get this 1+1 equals three effect, which, you know, I kind of came to see in cannabis, down the road is like, is the entourage effect. But, you know, all these plants kind of had that, you know, that those types of properties. And, you know, it just really opened up my eyes to, you know, someone who was more involved with the, aesthetics of the product and the design, to just kind of fall in love with the formulary. And that's not like what I got into next. It was just like, you know, this interest, you know, effectively like lie dormant for a few years. I did a little bit of like, you know, formulation on the side in my Brooklyn apartment. Like, you know, at night I would kind of blend up a couple different essential oils. I remember making like martini sprays and air purifiers and, you know, it's just like, yeah, it was just kind of like tinkering around though. And I'd make a little fragrance blend for a friend and, you know, talk about like, it's more than just the smell. It's, you know, it can elicit these types of emotion.
James is botanicals, right? Probably is the early on, right? Early on development of what you're doing today.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, one thing that I kind of found back then, and I think is still very true in cannabis today, is that, you know, you just kind of follow your nose. You know, if you find a plant and you really like, you know, the smell of it, you know, you're drawn to it for some reason, you know, chances are it's got some benefits that, you know, you're actually looking for. And I think that's, you know, kind of true with cannabis. At least that's how I've always, you know, like, you know, it's not as much of the norm these days, you know, the big jars of weed that you get to like smell through. But, you know, that's my favorite way to buy cannabis is to have a, you know, the lineup of like 10 different jars and you just smell each one and, you know, kind of see mm-hmm. where your mind resonates and what you're drawn to is probably going to be, the effects overall. Yeah. I had a few gigs. I worked at Johnson & Johnson in their global strategic design office, which was much more back to the packaging side of things. You know, it was like pretty killer job. I worked on like 3D models of, I was doing stuff. I think back then I was doing like, working on the brand Aveeno. I designed some CVS stores along with Johnson & Johnson. And, you know, I think at the time I was working on like case boxes for Lubriderm multi-packs for Costco. And it was, you know, it was okay. And it was just, I wasn't inspired. And then it was around that time that I had this buddy of mine who I knew from college. His name is Brad Melshanker. And, you know, he has very, I think, like, not just one of my favorite cannabis brands, like one of my favorite brands in the world, 710 Labs. Anyway, he was a college a friend of mine. And he had called me up and said, like, hey, I'm moving to Boulder. And we're opening up one of the very first licensed cannabis stores in Colorado. And my girlfriend at the time was working for Christian Louboutin, had like a, you know, good fashion job. She was Christian's assistant, but was also, you know, like basically working like 60 hours a week unpaid. And, you know, I was stressed out and it was just, you know, kind of felt like our time to maybe get out of the city, though we still consider ourselves, you know, kind of New Yorkers in some ways. But we packed up our stuff, moved out to Boulder, and worked with Brad on opening what I think was still one of the, you know, very influential early cannabis retailers in Boulder called The Greenest Green. And, you know, worked on the design of the store and the packaging and, you know, like reusable containers. And, you know, I was like kind of like cool going out to Colorado and selling weed to college kids, you know, kind of seemed like a interesting change of pace. But what blew me away though is, you know, college kids came in, but there's also like these 40 and 50 year olds from Boulder that came in for their like, you know, a bum knee from a ski injury or fibromyalgia. And, you know, it really just kind of like, I don't know, it was like, it was there that I had that realization in that moment. I was like, this is way bigger than getting high. You know, like there's more to it than just, you know, like, you know, alternative to a beer or something. Like this is, you know, this is actually medicine. And so ended up doing my own dispensary for a while in Denver. it's still around today, Rhino Supply Company. And we were doing, at the time we were doing high altitude, organically grown, and we drive up to the mountains, you know, every other weekend and go meet with these growers up in, you know, up in the mountains when it was still very, very gray market. You know, I remember, you know, some of those early meetings, you know, people would come armed to your meeting, like, okay,
wow,
sure. A little bit of change of pace from my corporate J&J days, you know? So, but like, you know, there was just so much love and so much, you know, like, I mean, but it was still like just this emerging kind of, you know, very malleable thing. And, you know, we were just, I think, so excited to be, you know, kind of on the, you know, the cutting edge of, you know, all this that was going down. And, it was around that time too, that, you know, the regulations were just really rolling out around that time in Colorado. You know, like there's people that come from California into Colorado because there was actually like a framework to be able to get, you know, an actual license versus, you know, the uncertainty. And, I participated in a lot of the early, you know, kind of, legislative and, you know, rulemaking and was part of some industry groups, you know, some folks that are still around today. I remember I had like a series of sketches that went out to, some state representatives, and I had drawn, you know, just like drawn out these little cartoons of basically every way that you could consume cannabis, like put it in a lotion, put it, you know, into a food product, put it, you know, into a suppository, put it into a breath, you know, like all these different ways, because, you know, back then people really just saw it as like, okay, cannabis, people smoke it, you get high. Like, I don't know if I'm all for that, but it was kind of in that, you know, that early phase that, you know, I don't know, there's just people were starting to open their eyes. And sometime during that dispensary, those dispensary days, we were making a bunch of different products. Like we would, you know, like infuse honey and, you know, then just started to make some, you know, really basic like salves. And I had someone helping me out with one of these products, mixing up one of these salves. And, you know, back then we're like literally just taking a handful of weed, throwing it into a crock pot with like olive oil or jojoba oil and, you know, just letting it roll for a while. And he had, you know, gotten some, you know, he was making it without gloves or something and had like a, I think he had like a sprain something or another. And it was just like all the pain that I had just went away from when I was making this stuff. Like, this is really, really legit, you know? And I had heard stories from people's like, you know, like my grandma in Mexico used to make a cannabis salve for the horses, you know, when they would get like, you know, something, or, you know, I read, you know, so it's like, not like I was the first person to ever figure this out, you know, it's been happening for like thousands of years in India or China or whatever. There was just like this moment where it's just like, this could really be something. And it was around that time that vertical integration was kind of coming into effect in Colorado. And I was, you know, I was never a grower. I was never, you know, like I didn't really know that part of the business. And, you know, the kind of pathway that I was on with the dispensary didn't seem right. And there was this new type of license called a marijuana infused products license. And I teamed up with a few other brands, Chiba Chews. I don't know if you ever heard of those guys. There was another brand still around Colorado today, Canyon Cultivation, which we worked with for years. Some folks that aren't around anymore, but have really great brands that were, you know, kind of starting out by, you know, selling brownies in Red Rocks parking lots after, you know, after shows, whatever, that were, you know, kind of growing up into the regulated market. And we put together, there's like five or six brands and we put it all under, you know, one kind of license and, got a license, put it together and got a little manufacturing facility. And, you know, that was really the birth of Apothecana, was operating out of this, you know, kind of like little product collective type of thing.
I find it pretty amazing. Like, you know, here you are just kind of experimenting with different things and kind of trial and error. And, you know, down the line now you've got like, you know, some of the best, you know, cannabis topical skincare products out there. And, you know, I think we're, at least in the space right now, we're seeing so much focus and so much marketing on the CBD side. And so I'm just curious, you know, from you with the cannabis topicals themselves, like any really cool stories that you've heard about, you know, people using the products where it's helping alleviate certain conditions. I mean, I heard when you were saying your friend with the fractured finger or whatever it is, but I think a lot of people don't necessarily know about, you know, how cannabis on a topical perspective can help.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I would go around to like the dispensaries and they'd, you know, people would be like, man, if it doesn't get you high, like what's the point? And I'd be like, all right, you know, maybe a little bit too early here.
Right.
You know, I think early on, I had some friends from the dispensary that, you know, started picking these up and, you know, started using it for fibromyalgia. And, I had this one woman who I had, you know, been working with, you know, for a while. And, she would really come back and be like, you know, I've never experienced anything in my life that has alleviated these symptoms quite like this. I remember getting it was a gentleman in Hawaii. I don't have any idea how he even got our products. He must've been visiting Colorado, but he was a veteran and an amputee. And, he talked about alleviation of phantom limb syndrome, which I didn't even know, like, you know, was really a thing back then. And you know, like really what was, you know, kind of the core purpose and focus of the product was for, you know, like nerve disorders and pain. You know, it wasn't until like kind of recently that people got into like, you know, cannabis cosmetics and, you know, putting it into, you know, make your skin look bright and great. Like it was much more about like, you know, like I have a sports injury that is debilitating, you know, or I have this, you know, neurological condition that's, you know, like preventing me from playing with my grandkids. And, man, I'll tell you, like, if it wasn't for those stories coming through and people, you know, were like, I rely on this, I would never have made it through. I mean, like, you know, like the financial struggles, facing like, you know, just being a criminal, treated like a criminal by like, you know, by the people you're trying to do business with, like, you know, banks or whatever, you know, having people like chew me out and telling me how I'm, you know, screwing up, you know, Colorado by bringing this crap in here and bringing this weed in here, you know, like there wasn't this financial incentive back then. It was, you know, like if I wanted a financial incentive, I'd go, you know, go back to New York and, you know, work in, you know, an industry out there. It was really more about being part of this foundation and this community in Colorado. And there was these really incredible, passionate people, a lot of them who are still, you know, around today in, you know, one form or another. I mean, it was around this time, it was very sad to hear this week that Charlotte Figge passed away. But she was a marijuana refugee who had come to her parents, you know, having this you know, young daughter who had Dravet syndrome, which caused these, you know, like frequent and severe seizures. They had heard about, you know, cannabis and its capacity to you know, to help make, you know, those some of that subside, and came out to Colorado and started working with, you know, some hemp growers. And, you know, that was really when like CBD, you know, kind of came about. But, you know, it was things like that, that just made it like, it was more than just business, you know. It wasn't about like, you know, launching a new, you know, it was about like I felt obligated, you know, and it was something that I couldn't have gotten out of it if I wanted to, because, you know, like, I think there was a lot of like, oh, is it really medical? You know, that kind of time. But like in like 2011, 2012, it was only medical. And we really talked about patients and people really relied on this. I mean, people were coming from other parts of the country to get relief. And the letters that we got about how what we were doing was fundamentally changing their interaction with the world around them, you know, there wasn't a choice that I really had in the matter, even though I like totally lost, you know, everything in the first few years, any savings I had, money I'd borrowed to start the business. You know, there wasn't anywhere near enough money coming in as going out, which, you know, definitely helped us, you know, transition from our New York lifestyle a little bit, and, you know, and actually having a good job. So it was like, I don't know, we really had to kind of go back, you know, like we were in it for a passion and for a cause. And I think those few years in Colorado, you know, maybe like 2010 through 2014, you know, it was a lot of the work that people did back then that has allowed for this opportunity today. You know, and I think it's not as often acknowledged, but you know, that was the time when people like really made a difference, and I think set this whole thing up for, you know, the level of acceptability that it's, you know, that has come to be today, which is also, you know, with that acceptability comes, you know, the commercialization and, you know, like I see a lot of, you know, new products and new brands, and, you know, a lot of it's just kind of like, you know, doing some graphic design and, you know, like, hey, we have a brand, you know, but I don't know, there was a lot more to it. And I think without the community that was in place, it just wouldn't have happened the way that it really did.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for one, thank you for kind of paving the way, through hardship and tough times, you know, to bring us in the space where we are today. So that goes a long way, you know, and I think you guys have really built a great brand, and you have so many different products, like for so many different things. So I just wanted to ask you too, you know, from a marketing perspective, you know, now that you have a wide range of creams and lotions and oils and all sorts of stuff, like how do you guys look at marketing?
Well, okay. So we have two sides of our business, the hemp CBD side, where we sell that online. We're sold through CVS is our biggest retail account. We're in 500, 600 stores. So from that side of things, you know, really digital marketing is the name of the game, you know, hence us, you know, being on here today and working with you guys. Like, you know, it's all about just trying to get your message out to the right, you know, target customer. And, you know, we look to get a conversion and get someone to pick up a product on, you know, on our website. And, you know, that's a pretty solid margin. So in many ways, that's kind of like straightforward and not that dissimilar from other, you know, CPG direct-to-consumer brands. Like Glossier was probably, you know, one of the more outsized influences early on. And, you know, seeing how, you know, how that company really built its community, you know, through Into the Gloss, the magazine that kind of came before the product line, but they cultivated community, and their community was into the product and the lifestyle and the image. And, you know, that's kind of the pathway that we try to follow on the hemp CBD side of things. Now, we still operate in regulated cannabis. So we effectively had to split off our business in, you know, in a couple different, you know, kind of two different parts, one that handles the hemp CBD and this other side of the business where we work with partners in different states. We basically supply everything but the regulated cannabis. So for example, in California, you know, we'll ship the bottles and the base lotion and, you know, kind of the essential oil blend that really has that benefit that's, you know, we're sourcing from different farms here, you know, around Colorado and California. We'll send all that out. It gets manufactured, you know, in a licensed facility who purchases the regulated cannabis, you know, in according to all like state laws. And then that product's distributed out to the dispensaries. We just started working with Kiva Sales and Services, which we're so excited about, because we've been working on that relationship for, you know, for a while. So they'll be handling the distribution of our products throughout California. In Canada, we have a partner up there, 48 North, who are absolutely, you know, incredible partner. They have their own like farms, sun-grown cannabis, and are, you know, grow really, really beautiful flowers. And they manufacture and distribute the products. And it's a little bit of a different model up there. You know, same kind of deal. We get them the componentry and all the base ingredients. They source their own sun-grown cannabis, assemble the products, we'll go up and train their team when we first, you know, first onboard that. But then they sell, they have to sell to like, you know, the Ontario Liquor Board, and then the dispensaries buy from, you know, it's just like every state, every region has different restrictions around advertising and how the product gets out there. So, you know, that's been, you know, there's no recipe to cover like all of those markets. So what we really rely on in those markets is education, because it's all, I mean, it's the same thing with any, you know, dispensary, like whatever the bud tenders are kind of, you know, into is probably what they're going to be recommending. So what we try to do from a market perspective is early on, we'll send in massage therapists to go do a training. Yesterday, we actually did a training with 50 different Kiva salespeople. But one of our sales guys, Jeff, he put on this virtual education seminar that, you know, people sat in for an hour Zoom conversation, which is, you know, like we do what we can in the times. But that's generally how we would approach any regulated market, is you just want to educate the people that are, you know, that are selling the products, because it's so new to so many people that, you know, they're looking for the expertise when they go in. So, but there's still a long way to go on education. I mean, I'm kind of amazed still, like, you know, people's knowledge. I think everyone knows kind of how this stuff works, but, you know, I still am surprised people are like, oh, these products can help out with pain. Like, yeah, you know, totally. Like, that's worked for 10 years. Yeah.
So as far as your products are concerned, do you have any like bestsellers, like anything that people absolutely, you know, they love it so much, they keep buying it?
Yeah, we have our best-selling product is our Extra Strength. Our Extra Strength, now it's called Relieving Cream, our Extra Strength Relieving Cream. It used to be called our Pain Cream back before we had to, you know, change some of the names. A lot of people still call it Pain Cream. And that product, actually, it was one of the early products we designed. I was spent some time in the Denver Public Library and researching just native plant medicine around like the High Rockies and, you know, in this region, and found that, you know, peppermint, juniper, arnica, lavender, you know, they all kind of, you know, hung out together. You know, you ever take a hike around Vail or Aspen, you'll, you know, smell it in the air. And going back to some of that education and learning that I had with my old mentor, Horst, you know, it's like those things that kind of naturally occur together have these synergies. So that blend has from day one, you know, really been one of our best selling products. And it's, you get the, you know, some of the pain reduction from in peppermint, there's menthol. Menthol is a compound of peppermint, just like, you know, terpenes are compounds of, you know, cannabis or whatever. So you have menthol from peppermint, you get a little bit of methyl salicylate that comes from wintergreen, you get the anti-inflammatory, anti-bruising benefits of arnica. Juniper helps, actually it helps like enhance penetration, so it absorbs better into, you know, into the skin. And that really provides this, you know, kind of pain relieving benefit, especially when you pair it with, you know, CBD, or, you know, best is CBD plus THC, you know, 1-to-1 ratio, in my opinion, at least. So that's been our best-selling product for almost the entirety of our time in business. And we have people that purchase that in bulk, repeat order, buy it for their friends and family. I think we have this one person who's like, you know, in their lifetime has bought like $15,000 worth of this product. We'll always call them up and be like, hey, do you need a wholesale account? If you're selling this, it's okay. Let's just set you up properly. And they're like, no, I'm cool. I'm just going to keep buying it the way that I do. You know, just like, all right, who knows what you're even doing with it. I did have an artist friend who wanted to do a little art installation where he was going to take a bath in it. But, you know, we never quite put that together. But the entire category of our Extra Strength has been our bestseller. We released a bath soak late last year, and that's kind of quickly become very, very popular. Anyone else that's probably run into us at a trade show or a cannabis cup has probably been sprayed on the back of their neck with our Extra Strength spray. That's, you know, way that we would introduce people. You'd kind of spray them on the back of their neck, let them go on their way, and then without fail, 10 minutes later, they're back. What is that stuff that you sprayed on me?
Right.
Hey, check it out. Yeah.
That's cool. That's fun. Well, listen, it was great getting to hear more about, you know, the business and all the great things that you guys have been doing. And congrats, you know, one on being a pioneer and continuing to push through the space. You know, generally, you know, on these podcasts, we talk a little bit about business. And then towards the end, we do just a quick fire challenge. Pretty simple. I'll just ask you a question. First thing that comes to your mind. Are you ready?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see.
They're easy questions.
Okay.
So what's a holiday that doesn't exist that you'd like to create?
I think any days that are based on the understanding around some of the plant compounds would benefit society as a whole.
Absolutely. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Probably, I think just in, you know, in the early days, before I remember I was sitting on a plane and I had just gotten one of the very first vapes, like cannabis vapes I'd ever, you know, seen in Colorado. And I'm sitting on the plane in my seat and I take a puff of this thing and exhale like a little plume of smoke. And my wife just looks at me like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And people are looking around because it still smells like cannabis. And I'm just like, "What the fuck am I doing?" And luckily nothing happened. The plane wasn't evacuated or everything, but like, it was just, you know, I think it was too early. It was before people even like, you know, like cigarette vapes or anything. But I don't know if that was crazy or just flat out foolish, but that still sticks out in my mind, mostly by the look that she gave me after I did it.
I probably would have given you the same look too. Would you rather have a third eye or a third arm?
Third eye. I definitely feel that, you know, perception, intuition, all of those things are really much more useful than another appendage.
Would you rather only be able to whisper or only be able to shout everything?
I'm definitely a low talker, a close talker. I'm much more of a whisperer or a shouter.
I had a feeling over that. And I got to tell you, like, if I had the chance to, I would be whispering too, because I'm very noise sensitive. Would you rather be a hobbit or an elf for 24 hours?
I think the elven lifestyle would be a little bit more luminous, a little bit brighter. Though I do appreciate hobbit homes and subterranean living. So it's kind of a toss-up, but if I had to pick one, probably elf.
Okay. If you could make a rule for a day and everyone had to follow that rule, what would it be?
Well, I think, again, I find that people do really do benefit from exploring plant medicine. So, you know, I always come to a little bit of like, you know, as long as you can stay safe. But I do think people should at some point, you know, experience psychedelics. And if we had to just get that all done with, get everyone, you know, out of the way in one day, you know, maybe that would be the rule for the morning is, you know, you had to have a little dose of something.
That would be an epic day if everybody was experimenting, with mushrooms. Crazy.
Yeah, that'd be a good day.
Cool. Well, James, listen, it was great having you on the show and great to hear about your whole story and all of the fun ways that you've discovered what you're doing now. And, you know, I'll be watching you and I'm going to try some of your products and, you know, can't wait to share that with you.
Oh, man. Yeah. Drop me an email after this, like, with a good address. I'll get them headed your way.
Perfect. All right, James.
All right.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in, and if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.